Good morning, 7:40 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Apparently, we need to start playing the foghorn. Not the foghorn leghorn, but the foghorn because it's foggy. I knew it was foggy this morning when I came in, and somebody sent me a picture of, like, I-10 over Escambia Bay. And but, you know, turn on your lights. Be visible. Be safe. You can see. It's all right, I hope. Anyway, and somebody says in Pace it's really bad. So I know it's not super bad here, but the sun's going to burn that stuff off pretty quick. Here in studio, got Sheriff Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, welcome back, sir. Good to have you.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
You
doing?
Never quite know what to make of me, do
well,
you?
I'm just looking at your weather forecast.
Thank you.
It's brilliant.
On the pea soup scale, it's not ready yet.
Because you look out the window and say, it's foggy outside.
Yeah, all right. You know, all right. Prepare. So we had a really awful thing happen last night, kind of an unusual and awful, right? Over in by Ashton Brosnahan Park off Millbrook, is that right?
Yeah, we had a murder-suicide. You know, these are, again, domestic-related. In this case, we had a son in some sort of an argument or disagreement with his father, ended up shooting and killing his father, and then he came outside of the bedroom that they were in, ended up getting into an altercation with his mother. His mother subsequently fled to a bedroom. She heard a couple shots, and one of those shots was the son taking his own life. So when we got there, obviously, the father in the was deceased at the scene, and the son, the shooter, the killer, he ended up dying at the hospital. So,
I mean, awful for
wrapping
her,
that investigation
for the
up.
Dad, for the, and you can only, only imagine the anguish the son must have been going through in those moments to make that horrible decision after what he had done already. It's awful.
Yeah, who knows to be triggered to that point.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what the circumstances were, and we may never know the exact circumstances now because both of them are dead.
And you know, I know we say it a lot, but I just don't want to go without saying it, that, man, take a breath, take a walk. I must have said it 1,000 times to my boys, you know, raising three boys, leave the area. You know, the number one thing you can do if you're starting to get into high tension, you know, because the feeling is like, I got to retaliate. I got to say something. I got to do something. Just leave. Get out. Separation. Distance that'll solve 99% of these things, at least for now.
Well, and I believe you can practice these things on smaller arguments.
Yep.
You know, you can make this a habit. You can make this part of your personality, really.
Yeah.
You can take that breath, and if you know that you get really, really sprung up, then you understand that you take a look at yourself and decide, you know, it is a good idea to walk away, and we can always come back. We can all probably use a little bit of that advice.
Absolutely, and that's why I love, like, you know, you guys are doing you're starting a Blazer Academy tonight, right? So,
right.
You know, teaching people all kinds of things, including how to handle their emotions. You know, handling your emotions. I mean, I said it before, I'll say it again, but, you know, to become a man, you learn how to handle your anger and your lust. I mean, that's, you know, you learn to handle those things and you become a man. Until you do, you're not. But that's just one of those things, like you coach football for a long time, mm-hmm. You know, and people say, well, it's a violent sport. Yeah, within limits.
It's
with restraint.
Control, right.
Right. And that's learning how to hit somebody in a way that's not a penalty is a way of learning how to act within limits with restraint to control yourself, right?
Well, that's exactly what we, you know, as football coach, at least, we were talking about that controlled, before the whistle, you were this controlled, violent individual. But once you're a gentleman afterwards.
Right.
You're a gentleman between plays, you're a gentleman after the game, you're a gentleman before the game. And that is exactly what we teach or try to instill in the students in the Blazer Academy. And we talk a lot about de-escalation. We talk a lot about why does one thing make you so angry that it affects your life, or could the consequences could affect, you know, the rest of your life or someone else's life. So that you're right. That's exactly what we talk about. We don't necessarily talk about murder, suicide, but we take those, you know, situations and we turn them into our own role play type scenarios.
You know, we got to talking about Blazer Academy because of this awful event. I didn't know you did that in the Blazer Academy. Like, it makes perfect sense. I'm glad you do. I had more always been thinking that it was more about social protocols and learning how to, you know, shake hands and look somebody in the eye. And I know you do all
there
that stuff
part
too.
Of that, yeah.
And, you know, how to make a resume or just, you know, that kind of stuff. But the fact that you openly talk with them about, you know, conflict resolution, de-escalation, managing your emotions is, I mean, of course you do, but thank God you do. Like, that's super important stuff.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, what makes our program, our Blazer Academy, different is that we, the instructors are law enforcement professionals mostly.
Yeah.
And although we do have some, you know, cautionary tales from people on the outside, but and part of what we tell them is that we use the experiences that we've either had personally or those that we're aware of. And like I say, we'll take this and we'll say, okay, let's just find a way to make, to, you know, to talk about this de-escalation, talk mm-hmm. to, you know, maybe, you know, and they won't know it. They typically don't know where we get it from, but what if you, we'll do something like, let's consider your parents have made you so angry, you don't know what to do with yourself.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we tell them, we teach them. We're not the only ones to teach it, but we can reinforce it in the 6 weeks that we have.
Absolutely. No, I think that's fantastic stuff. You had an incident, I think it was last night, maybe, at Softly Pines Road, a SWAT team call out, right?
Yeah, we had our patrol units going over to a house on Softly Pines Road. They were looking for a guy named Jurin Dworshak, D-W-O-R-S-H-A-K, Dworshak.
Okay.
And when he saw us, he ran into his house. We surrounded the house. These are felony warrants, right? These are felony orders, basically, to take him into custody. We circled the house. We called our SWAT team out there. We knew that he had his wife inside there. We tried to talk to him and or her. There was nothing there. No response from him. Obviously, we knew he was there because we saw him walk inside.
Like, wouldn't take a call. Wouldn't yell through the door.
Yeah, he wouldn't do anything. But okay. He did. He would move the blind, so we knew someone was in there.
Okay.
Knew that there was. And again, we saw him in there. And we're not going to go away. You got felony warrants on you.
Yeah.
We circled the house. We got a search warrant. We called our SWAT team out. The Rook came out. We had our negotiators
That's
out.
That's the, like, Bobcat-y kind of thing with the front armor.
Bobcat. It's a ballistic Bobcat. Basically, but it also has, like, a ram and such. In this case, we decided we're going to go ahead and ram the door. We pushed the door in with this Bobcat, sent a drone inside to take a look at the situation. Ultimately, we had to go inside there, tried some non-lethal on him.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work, so we had to pile on top of him and take him into custody. Everyone's okay. His wife's okay. He's okay. But now he's got some more serious charges on
right.
him. He's had some battery on law enforcement. We've had some deals with this
okay.
knucklehead before. And now he's, you know, loaded up with more charges.
And, you know, that's, you've been doing law enforcement more than 5 years. yeah. A little while.
Yeah.
When about did all the non-lethal stuff come into play? It seems to my mind like it's within the last 20 years or so it's really become an emphasis. Am I
probably the late 90s. I recall I was a sergeant on the SWAT team at the Pensacola Police Department, and I was the first non-lethal instructor. They sent me to pepper spray school and beanbag school and all these other things. Mm-hmm. And so I came back, and I was the instructor for that at the police department. So that's the first time that we had it. Now, it was about that time for your period, probably late 90s. That it really became popular with law enforcement.
And, I mean, you had the advent of tasers and, you know, all of the
that was
options.
A little bit later, right.
Yeah, all of the options eventually. One of the, I don't know, it got a lot more attention on social media. I know we published the video on our Facebook page, but it happens occasionally. You had somebody going the wrong way on I-110.
Yes.
At speed, didn't notice that cars were going around him. Caught on video. Thank God they didn't run into anybody. But one of your deputies was going the other direction correctly, passed him, whipped around and came and pulled him over, right?
Yeah. We all saw the video. And I was cringing, hoping that no one was going to get hit. Because
absolutely.
As you mentioned, we get these reports occasionally, maybe not here, but in other areas where a head-on collision resulted in one or two or multiple fatalities. In this case, there was a white truck that was southbound in the northbound lane of Interstate 110. Luckily, we had one of our lieutenants, Joanna Ramos. She was getting on shift. She was getting on call. So she gets out. She's in an unmarked but lights, a lighted vehicle. And when she gets on going northbound, she's going the correct way. She realizes the cars are veering in front of her. Then she has to take evasive action, then immediately turns right around and ends up stopping the truck. So luckily she was there. Everyone said, they must have called 911. They may have called 911 later, but this was one of our lieutenants just happened to be at the right place at the right time. There was one question, how come she was going the wrong way? She wasn't pursuing this truck the wrong way. she was going the correct way and noticed right in front of her while his car is veering, and she was able to veer herself and then turn around immediately and stop it. Ended up arresting a 43-year-old female for DUI, and we are so lucky that she did not kill anyone or herself.
We had some people post on that video and say that they were there, like they
right.
didn't get hit, and they're yeah. grateful. And it's got to be terrifying for her going, because she had to pursue the wrong way in order to pursue the pickup. I mean, it was a DUI ultimately, right? I think was the charge.
Yes, DUI. Yeah,
so, I mean,
well, only because she didn't kill anyone,
right?
It would have been a lot worse than
right.
that.
Right.
Again, normally, I got a question yesterday. How would you have handled? Well, we would have probably stopped traffic before then. Try to get upstream if
you
will.
Time, right.
Yeah, but again, this was just a quick thinking deputy, and obviously to veer away and then turn right around and stop the truck.
I did want to ask you, just because it's been so much in the news, you know, we spent a lot of time yesterday talking with Alex Andrade, Representative Andrade, about the immigration fight between the Governor DeSantis and the legislature. And you and I talked a little bit about this last week, that mm-hmm. one of your big concerns is you just don't want to have more to do because you're already, you know, responding. You're at capacity in terms of what you're responding to all the time. But is there a problem here to be solved? Is there a gap to be overcome? You know, your ability to work with ICE, or when you have worked with ICE and your folks in the past, can you maybe, I don't know, just give us some perspective on, you know, you're the local law enforcement, and immigration is becoming more of an issue, and enforcing illegal and deporting people. How does that work at our level, at your level?
Well, I want to remind everyone, we've always worked with our federal partners on violent criminals and gang members. And if there is a violent criminal, whether it's someone that's legally or illegally in this country, we're going to work with our DEA and ATF, FBI. We're on numerous task forces. We're on a task force right now with the Marshal Service, and it's a violent crime task force. We look for people with violent crimes, and if they happen to be someone that's here illegally, obviously we're gonna help them with that. So we've always done that, and we'll continue to do that, because no one wants violent criminals off the street or violent gang members off the street more than I do. We also would like to add those who are crimes against children, the internet crimes yeah. against children. There's a lot, but there's certainly some of those that fit that category as well. So as violent criminals and anyone that violates a child, we're going to go after them, whether we need federal authorities or not. So that's always the case. Now, where local law enforcement sits with this federal level and their state level and all this sort of thing, I'll be honest, I don't know what the final outcome of these competing bills are going to be. And I don't know exactly what they're tasking local law enforcement with. Mm-hmm. And again, are we busy? Of course, we're very busy. But I will tell you that whatever, we will enforce the state statute. I'm sworn to uphold the Constitution, state of Florida, and the United States. And I'm just hoping that there's that the federal feds can do their job is what I'm really hoping.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that if there's any changes to the state law, that it's something that we can all agree upon is best for the community. And again, doesn't take us away from responding to 911 calls, and I really want to concentrate on the violent felons, whether they're legal or illegal.
You made me think of something. I know a lot of times you and I talk about a crime that happens, and nobody's willing to talk to you. Nobody's willing to cooperate with you,
right.
Because of whatever reasons. One thought I think some people might have is that with particularly Mexican or Hispanic immigrant communities feeling more beleaguered, attacked, at risk, whatever you want to call it, that they might become less eager to cooperate, more reluctant to cooperate because, you know, heck, if I talk to the cops, maybe my brother gets arrested or whatever because he's here illegally. Have you run into anything like that in that particular community here locally? Has there been any issue with that?
Oh, we have not. We have had, okay. in the past, we've had some reported crimes involving, those that appear who have ultimately been illegal, and these refer those to ICE because
okay.
that's their job.
Yeah.
But no, we don't have any, we have not experienced any thoughts where,
they
experiences
don't
want to
talk to
where no one wants to talk to us because of for fear.
For status. Okay. Well, that's why I ask. So, Sheriff Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons, always a pleasure, sir. Again, the Blazer Academy, another class of this fantastic award-winning program starting tonight. Kudos to you for implementing it, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for the
time.
You
bet. Y'all take care.